What's going on, my friend? This is Alex Pardo, and this is episode 294, another masterclass coming at you on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's up, guys? Hope you are doing amazing. I have my my friend, Mr. Ken Holmes, who I met through the Life Inner community on the podcast today. And Ken is somebody, guys, that has been in the real estate business since 1987. He actually started as an appraiser. He has done every type of deal you could possibly imagine, from rehabs to rental, subject twos, lease options, owner financing, new construction, new development, the whole nine, and just comes to us with a wealth of knowledge and experience, and somebody who just has a passion for coaching and helping others. And this is such a content-rich podcast that I just finished recording with him, and what you're about to listen to, because we talk all about financial freedom. And he has a different mindset on building wealth and achieving financial freedom. He has done it through debt early on in his career, and he's learned a lot from that and has made a lot of mistakes, some of which he shares on the podcast, and mistakes that he continues to see investors make today. And his approach has really, you know, he's been shaped by his experience, he has built financial freedom and has continues to build wealth and generate cash flow by not leveraging debt and doing it completely debt-free. And this particular podcast is all about how you can do the same, you know, how to leverage self-directed accounts in a tax-free environment. You know, on a couple episodes ago, we had Edwin Kelly, and we don't get into the nuts and bolts of doing that, but we talk about just... There's so much that we talk about on the episode here. I'm excited because, you know, you might even hear me on the podcast writing some things down, but he talks about the steps to financial freedom, and it starts with setting a lifestyle goal and then understanding how to generate high rates of returns, understanding how to reduce or eliminate your taxes, and then essentially, you know, how to make equity, cash it out, and then invest in higher yielding return deals. So we've been talking that we're probably going to have him back on a part two to just do specific case studies. But he does share two or three examples of how, you know, he was getting into deals with no money and still generating cash flow, a hybrid approach of how you can make some money up front and still generate cash flow. And we talk specifically to wholesalers on this episode. But even if you're not a wholesaler, I definitely want to encourage you to plug in, because we're talking financial freedom. We're talking wealth building, and Ken has mastered that, and he does it in a unique way, in his way, without leveraging debt. So guys, let's hop into this episode. Mr. Ken Holmes, welcome to the Flip Empire Show, my friend. How you doing?
Alex, man, I appreciate the opportunity to be on. Doing great.
Yeah, how man. I'm doing awesome, man. Anytime I have the opportunity to connect with, you know, someone with as much knowledge, experience as you have, man, I'd be foolish not to. And so, you know, I'm fortunate to just kind of be the host of the show and get you on here so that, you know, people listening can learn from. I know one of the things we're going to talk about today, Ken, are how you got started in this business, a lot of the mistakes you made, and then what you've been doing as of the last, I don't know how many years, to build financial freedom and to build wealth, which is really what we're going to talk about today on the episode.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. You know, networking in general is, the best thing you can do in business, whether it's a big mastermind or people at the coffee shop or the podcast and all that kind of thing. There's so much to learn from people who are in the trenches, people who are out there doing every day. And I've gotten so much more out of that than any of the umpteen courses, boot camp seminars, and all that stuff that I've paid for and gone to over the years. I used to make a joke, and this will age me, but there used to be the Creative Real Estate Online conventions, you know, 20-something years ago in Atlanta every year.
Right.
And I always joked that the real learning there was at lunch and in the bar. There were 600 people at these conventions. And if you could hook up with the right people, you could learn a lot. So it wasn't really the speakers. You know, that's what they touted. Oh, go for the speakers.
Sure.
But it was the real people. And that's where I met Hal Roark. That's where I met John Heyer. That's where I met Steve Cook. That's where I met Jim Kennedy, a plethora of the big names that yeah. you know was at that place. But none of those people were speaking. They were just the regular guys that you could actually sit and talk to and be, hey, man, what do you really do? Come on, what do we really do here?
Man, and one of the things I always encourage people to do is with technology, we have so many resources at our disposal, but yet sometimes I think that people get comfortable just working behind a cell phone and a laptop and not getting out there and networking, connecting with people. And like you said, finding out, connecting with the right people and finding out what is it you do, because one conversation, one relationship can completely change the course of your business and your life. So
there's no doubt about it, man. I couldn't agree more.
Awesome, man. So you got started in this business. It's got to be over what, 20, 25 years now?
Yeah, I don't want to make a long story out of it, but I've been in real estate since the late 1980s. I started as a real estate appraiser. I worked my way into some rentals and I flipped my first house in 1997.
Okay.
I think I actually bought a house for the purpose of fixing it up and reselling it. And so, yeah, I've been around for a long time. And, it's so long ago that there was no internet. There weren't any comps online. We had comp books back then as appraisers. And there weren't really that many people teaching real estate. Just a few were starting. But just back when John Allen wrote his books, and first seminar I went to was John Schaub out of Florida, which he was really good. But the bottom line was, when I decided that I wanted to get into real estate, other than just being an appraiser, but to be a landlord and do some creative things, the library is where I went. And there are a lot of books down at the library. And what I learned, the main message back then was how good leverage was. And so I read these books and I was an appraiser and I understood values and I had a lot of clients that were lenders, and it became fairly easy for me to, buy a house for $50,000, put 25 grand in it, get it all rented out, have it appraised for over 100, refi most or all of my money back out of it and go on and on and on. And that's what the books were telling me to do. That's what I was doing. And we saw the same thing for years, even Rich Dad, Poor Dad, leverage, leverage, leverage and all that. And they just write the numbers down and they never really, in my opinion, explain the risk of having all that debt. And they didn't talk a lot about having a lot of money in reserves, about if you have a bad month or a bad 6 months, how do you get through it and all that. And they just always talked about the kind of the big picture. You buy 10, 20, 30, 40 houses, you get these 15-year loans, 20-year loans, and then you manage all that for a big chunk of your life, and then one day, everything will be good.
Right.
And I think that is the main, as I have gotten older, been around the block two or three times, had a lot of things go wrong and some things go right. And I think that, to me, is the wrong message. And so, as I get involved in coaching and teaching people, I like to share my perspective, which is that to have this goal of having just a tremendous number of properties. I remember I set a goal for, I can't remember what it was, 30, it was 30-something houses, but the math worked out that when they're all paid for, I'd have $500,000 coming in, whether I got out of bed or not. And so I had that goal, $500,000. But what's interesting is that at the time I was only making $100,000, and yet somehow I was living okay. So somehow I felt like I had to have $500,000. So I set this tremendous goal of all this debt, all this leverage, all these properties, and I'm working and working and working and managing all those to make $500,000. But I put no thought into that number. It just sounded good. I like $500,000 a year. That sounds good. Just that still sounds good. I mean, that's a great number.
Yeah.
But so when I'm teaching it now, I like to talk to people about, hey, what do you make now doing what you're doing? And how can we make that with passive income just to set you free? doesn't mean you have to sit on the couch the rest of your life. Doesn't mean you have to accept that as, okay, I've got there, so I guess I'm going to do nothing. You can still work. You can still add more to it.
It gives you options.
I think it gives you a lot of options, and it's a lot more realistic and achievable. And the other thing that I do now that's different is that I just don't go the debt route. To me, when we talk about financial freedom, you can sum it up with you need to make more money than you need, then you need to invest the excess in things that produce cash flow.
Yeah.
Period. That's it. That's the whole, I mean, you can go on and on about financial freedom and all that. But if you make more than you need and you invest the rest in cash flow, at some point, the cash flow from your investments will be equal to what you're making in your business and in your job or whatever. And at that point, you are free.
Yeah.
And again, if you achieve that at 40, if you achieve that at 30 or 45, whatever age you happen to be, it doesn't mean that you have to accept that as the final amount of money we're going to make. It just means that every time you decide to get out of bed and you go do something and you make 20 grand, you can take that 20 grand, put it in, and now your monthly income goes up if you're invested in things that are making monthly income. And so I think the backwards thinking that I do now is to, the first goal is just to replace yourself. When I do the talk at Rio's about this and people say, what is financial freedom? Or what is retirement? You know, people say, well, is it age 65 or, when you get done working or whatever. But to me, it's just when you have replaced yourself in the business. If yourself has been making 100 grand or 200 grand or whatever the number is, if you've replaced that with asset income, you are financially free.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can't work. It just means that you are financially free. You were living off that 100 or 200 by working. Now you can live off that same 100 or 200 from the asset. And so to me, financial freedom is when you replace yourself with asset income.
Mm-hmm.
When I do this talk, Alex, I have a formula, and I know we're on a podcast, and so people can't see it, but it's a pretty simple formula. And the way it reads is asset times rate of return less taxes equals lifestyle. Okay. Assets times rate of return less taxes equals lifestyle. So if your lifestyle is say 10,000 bucks a month, I coach a lot of people, and 10,000 is some people live on less, some people live on more.
That's a good average.
Sure, it's an average I think people can relate to. You know, if you want be super rich, you can just add a zero to all these numbers. But the 10,000 a month is a lot of people can live on 10,000 bucks a month after tax. Like I said, doesn't mean that's the end all, but they can live on. And so, okay, here we are. We need to accumulate the first one, assets, in order to pay for the lifestyle at the end. But it's the two in the middle that I think people think about not enough. So it's assets times rate of return less taxes equals lifestyle. And the two examples I always use in my talk, Alex, are if you make 8% on your money and you're paying taxes at the going rate, mm-hmm. in order to have 10,000 bucks a month after tax, you have to have $2 million in assets. The $2 million times the 8% rate of return, less taxes, is about 10,000 bucks a month.
Okay.
But on the other hand, if you can make 15% on your money and pay no taxes, such as the money coming out of a self-directed IRA fund or whatever, you only have to have $800,000 in assets to make the same 10,000 a month.
Huge difference.
And so when I stand in front of their group, then I say, all right, which one's easier to get to? I think a lot of us can see $800,000 worth of that. That's a lot of people wind up with 800,000. 2 million seems like a big number. Like, people think they can get there, but not tomorrow. But 800, not that big. And I don't think people spend enough time figuring out how to make A, high rates of return, and B, how to pay little to no taxes. And yet, I think those are two of the most important things to learn. Because if our goal is to replace ourselves with asset income, once we set our goal of $10,000 a month, the amount of assets we have to purchase obviously goes down as we raise our rate of return.
Yeah.
So I set a goal about 5 years ago to have my IRA average 15%. And it does that. And I'm not saying every asset I have makes 15%. I've got some stuff that makes, you know, 11 or 12 or whatever. I won't touch anything that's not double digits. Mm-hmm. But I have some other deals that were really good that are making me 20% or 22%. So if my portfolio average is making 15, then I've achieved my goal. And all this money is in a self-directed IRA. Now, I'm not a young man like you, Alex. I'm 55 years old. So you're 59 and a half.
Ken, come on, man.
I can see it, dude.
You're a young man.
See it.
Come on. I'm a little younger, but 55, young, dude.
Well, I'll say it this way. I'm not a young man in the eyes of the IRS. I am a young man.
Fair enough.
But in the eyes of the IRS, I'm only 4 years away from taking that money out tax-free. So I can see it. You know, it's coming. And so I've got this portfolio, it's averaged 15%. You know, I'm not going to pay any taxes on that money when it comes out. And so $800,000 there will make me 10,000 bucks a month.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. And it's not that hard to get to compared to the 2 million and 3 million. And what I did wrong, back in the day was setting that huge goal. Like you, Alex, I'm a goal-driven person. And when I set a goal, I tend to get there. But what I did wrong was I set the wrong goal. I set a goal of having X number million dollars in net worth. And I think that was the wrong goal. I know that was the wrong goal. My goal should have been cash flow. Because I remember when I made my first million, I was buying these houses, and again, you know, I've got these houses, and they're worth 100, and I owe, you know, 65 grand, so I got $35,000 in net worth. But I wasn't making hardly anything on it per month.
Right.
So I kept buying houses and building net worth, and boy, it was great. I could take my financial statement down to my banker, and he loaned me more money, but that was about the only good that net worth did me.
Yeah,
I really couldn't take that net worth down to the store and buy anything. You know, I wasn't making any cash flow much off of all these houses that I was managing for free. And so I was doing a lot of work for really no money at the time. But I felt good about my net worth. And then one day, life would be good. But that one day is just a long way off. Because the way I've switched it now is by not using leverage and not using debt, as soon as I get any money, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. I don't care how little it is. I'm looking for a way to put that money to work debt-free.
Okay. I love it. By the way, you might see me here. So you guys listening on the podcast, Ken and I are on video here, and I'm actually taking some notes in case you just hear the pen going in the background. Ken, there's a lot to unpack there. I kind of want to hit the pause for a second. As far as, you know, you talk about people setting a goal where they want X number of millions of dollars in net worth. Do you feel that people set those numbers? Like for you, back in the day, it was $500,000. Do you think those are just lazy numbers that people pluck out of the air or because they hear, hey, $1 million or $10 million, and it's not really their goal? They haven't taken the time to break down what they want their life to look like and what that ultimately costs and what that looks like. Because when I hear, hey, I want to make $1 million in a year, you may really want $1 million in a year, but that sounds kind of like a lazy number. Like you plucked it out of the, you know what I mean? It's so, are you suggesting people, like there's going to be a lot of people listening and saying, hey, that's me. Right now, my goal is to make $1 million or 5 million or 20 million, whatever it might be. Are you suggesting that for these people, what's step one, step two, step three? Because you said a couple different things that I wrote down. You said, set a goal of having an X rate of return. Right. And you also talked about cash flow goal, not a cash goal, which, by the way, I completely agree. People talk about cash being king. I think cash flow is king. I just didn't realize that for the first 10 years of my career, which was my personal mistake.
Right.
And you and I have had, you know, offline conversations about that. So for somebody listening that is guilty, I'm using air quotes, of setting a big goal out there, what's step one, step two, step three to really determine is that their goal and how to figure out what rate of return they might need for to live the lifestyle they want, or what amount of cash flow they need to generate from assets?
Step one, I think, is define the life that you want. Because, you know, let's say that you won the lottery and you got $20 million all of a sudden, or $50 million, or whatever it might be. You'd probably, take a bunch of trips, buy some cool stuff, run around for a year, and then at some point you're back at home. You know, what would you really do? If money was no object, what would you really do? Most people never have that conversation, but if you really sit back, I mean, the things I like to do, I want to travel some, but I'm not going to travel 50 weeks a year. Mm-hmm. I like to do outdoor stuff. I like to go camping. I like to go kayaking. Those things are basically free once you own the gear. I like to spend time. I like to shoot basketball with my kids. I like to go skiing. That costs a little money. But on the whole, I don't need near as much money as I thought I needed, especially if you don't have any debt.
Yeah.
I don't need near as much money. And so if you can kind of, if people can say, hey, what would I really do? You know, that, I mean, that's the question. What would you do if somebody dropped $10 million in your bank account? And forget, we'll spend a year playing and that, but what would you do then? And how much does that lifestyle cost? And that's really the goal. We're talking about funding the life that you would actually enjoy. And if that's four trips a year at $10,000 each, and then, just paying for your family life and paying for your gas and your insurance and whatever. It's surprisingly way, I do this with students all the time. It's way less money than they think. Less money than they think. Experiences are what's fun.
Yeah, no, I've gone through that exercise myself, and I always assumed I needed X amount of dollars to live my ideal lifestyle. When you break it down on a monthly basis, 9 out of 10 times, I think you're going to find the desired lifestyle you want is a lot cheaper than what you think it might cost. Usually, for most people. Right.
It really is. And that's, like I said, that's where I got off track. And I think, again, the thing about the net worth is totally the wrong goal. And rate of return and cash flow are the right goals, because it's the rate of return on your assets that will produce the cash flow that will pay for that lifestyle once we decide how much that costs. So you decide how much it costs. You learn how to pay the least amount of taxes. You learn how to make higher rates of return so that you don't have to buy so many dang assets to get there.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of reverse engineering from that point. I mean, the more you study tax law and the more you study creative deal making and the ability to make high rates of return, the less you've got to work to save that asset income. It's just that simple. And I think I know that I did not do that. I bought 30 rental houses, and if you had asked me what they made, I would have told you, well, this one rents for $900. And the payment is $580. But I had no idea what kind of rate of return that house made had I owned it free and clear. When I woke up, like you said, a decade later, and actually started thinking the correct way, then I looked at some of my houses and I was like, yeah, I got this house. It's a cute house on a great street. It rents well, but it's worth $150, and it rents for $1,000. And then by the time I pay taxes, insurance, and maintenance and everything, I'm only making like 6.5% of my money.
Yeah.
That's a sorry investment.
Right.
I only liked it because I could get in with virtually no money, because I bought it cheap, fixed it up, refi my money back. So I like the fact that I could get in light. I like the fact that it rented easy to good tenants. But I was going to spend 20 years of my life paying that thing off, only to own an asset that made 6%.
Yeah.
And then when I started thinking the other way, I'm like, well, that doesn't qualify. If I want my portfolio to make 15, I can't be owning these 6% investments.
Right.
That's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so now everything that I do, I want to stick with things that make high rates of return, And they're out there, and they're especially out there for those of us in the real estate world that know how to do creative things and know a good deal when we see one, run across opportunity. And again, going back to the networking, have friends that you can do business with.
Yeah.
You know, because I stay here every month, and my IRA, most of my IRA stuff is in things that bring me relatively small monthly checks. And so I get 200 here, I get 300 here, you know. And so if I wanted to save up and buy some asset, Alex, that costs $150,000, we're going to have to wait a while.
Yeah.
But I'll have 20 grand in a month. And that 20 grand, I want to get it to work. And so by networking and getting out there and talking to people, letting people know that I buy houses and I buy notes, you know, and I've got money to put out and all that. I run across good opportunities. And so when I run across a good opportunity, like a couple of years ago, I did a deal where I bought the note on a church. And I've told this story before, but some people have lent money to a church.
I haven't heard this story.
And, it's cool, dude. So this man had lent money to a church startup. And the church owned an actual church. They own the real estate. And he had lent them, I think it was 50 grand, and they were paying well. And the note was for 10%, but the guy wanted out for some reason. The lender wanted out of that deal and he wanted to sell that note. Well, who's going to buy that note? Not a lot of people. But eventually it came to me through my connections at the RIA, and I was able to buy the balance on that loan. I think it was roughly 40 was owed at the time, and I was able to buy it for $36,000, which is a little over a 15% rate of return. But the collateral was like this whole church. I don't know what a church is worth, but it's worth more than $36,000. You know,
sure.
I could have sold it to another startup, so I felt really good about the collateral. Well, it was $36,000, and at the time I had bought some other stuff, I didn't have $36,000. But I had a bunch of friends. So basically, I made the deal. And then I called up some people, some of which you would know, Alex. And I was like, hey, man, who wants in on this? I got it all lined up. And I brought in the rest of the money. And so I took advantage of the good deal, even though I didn't have all the cash, because I had friends with cash. But we have a long-term relationship. And they trust me, and I trust them. And that is one of the best ways I know to get, you know, always be on the lookout for a deal. And if you don't have all the money, that's all right. If you've got some friends that can go in on it with you. And sometimes and that's like 2.0 of this. But if you have friends that don't know how to find deals and you find a deal that makes 15%, and let's say this deal costs 50 grand to make the numbers work, right?
Okay.
You got a deal you can buy for 50 grand. It makes 15%. You got a buddy over here. He don't know anything about real estate, but he knows you and likes you and trusts you. He thinks 10% is a good rate of return.
Arbitrage.
And so you could offer him half this deal at a 10% rate of return, and you buy the other half, and what's your rate of return going to be?
5%.
It's going to be 20. Wait. You're going to get your 15 plus his other 5.
Yeah, yeah.
You can leverage his money on the way in. So he might buy half of that deal, and I'm not doing the math with my calculator, but he might buy half of that deal for $30,000. You buy the other half for $20,000, and you get a 20% rate of return, and he gets a 10% rate of return. But he don't know how to make 10% any other way. You start cultivating those relationships. People learn how to make money with you. They know you're going to run the show. You're going to vet the deal. You're going to handle everything. And those are the deals that I get where I start making rates of return that starts with a 2.
Yeah.
When I'm in bed with somebody that doesn't have the expertise as me, but does have the money, your doctor friends and your dentist friends and your people not in real estate, your older people with retirement income, you can leverage their money and ratchet your rate of return way up.
I love the fact that you're sharing this, because there's a lot of people that I'm sure are listening that are saying to themselves, I don't have 20 grand or 30 grand or 50 grand. Well, you might not have the resources, but you just need to learn how to be resourceful. And that's why it's important to build your network and associate with certain types of people plant seeds, let people know what you do, because if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're a deal finder. You know how to find deals. Just because you don't have the financial resources doesn't mean you can't achieve these rates of returns that Ken is talking about.
Sure. Let's say you got a wholesaler. A wholesaler finds a great rental property or whatever it might be. Now, normally, he would think, okay, I need to go to the landlords on my list and sell this, and I'll make a $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 assignment fee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, could do that. But what if you knew somebody that would think an 8 or a 9 or a 10% rate of return was good, and you're networking with these people, you know they got the money, they don't really have the knowledge, and you could say, hey, let's do this deal together. They bring in the money, you got the deal, and you'll either run the management or know who to hire to run the management. And mm-hmm. so this wholesaler, instead of making another $5,000 assignment fee, another $10,000 assignment fee, they might actually be able to own 25, 30, 35% of a rental property for no money at all.
I just did.
For being the person.
So right after, how to do it. Right after Christmas, Ken, I don't know if you know, last year I started buying some rental properties in a particular mm-hmm. part. Even a B-class area. I just did a deal like that with a good friend of mine where he funded 100% of the purchase price of the property, 100% of the rehab. I hired the management company. I found the deal. I didn't have any money in the deal, and I own 25% of the house, of the equity, and 25% of the cash flow. So if you can find these deals and you know people that have money and are good with a certain rate of return, you can structure these things all day long.
Exactly. All right. Now let's compare and contrast that, Alex, to the same wholesaler finds the same deal, right? Maybe they could go to the bank, borrow the money, do the fix-up, get it rented, cash all their money back out. And so basically they were doing the same deal with the bank, and that they own 25% of it. I mean, they own the whole house, but the bank has a 75% mortgage, right?
Yeah, right.
It's really kind of the same deal, except one day that loan will pay off. Now we know not a whole lot's going to happen toward the payoff for the first 5 or 10 years,
yeah.
But eventually that loan would pay off. But in contrast, how much cash flow are they going to make right now? They're going to make hardly any. But
yeah.
If you bring in the private money for the money to buy it, rather than the bank for the money to buy it, when are we going to start making cash flow?
Mm-hmm.
Right now.
Right away.
Debt free.
Yeah.
Debt free. And so instead of waiting 20 years and then this asset will finally make us the money, it can make us the money right now. And that's what I'm trying to teach people, is to say, hey, you know, if this wholesaler is out there, they can structure this deal and they can say, hey, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to make $250 a month off this thing forever. And I don't have any money in it. Is that better than my $5,000 assignment fee?
Yeah.
Is that working toward getting me financial freedom? If you make the $5,000 and then you pay $1,000 of it to Uncle Sam, you know, you got $4,000 and you'll spend it and that'll be that. And next year you won't even be closer to financial freedom. The year after that, you won't be any closer. I say be looking for opportunity to get a piece. You can get a piece for free because you have the knowledge. That's a better choice. There's no taxes on that, except when you actually get the rate of return, but there's no taxes on the equity when you go in. And I don't think enough wholesalers are actually looking for an opportunity to be in the game. They just trying to quit their IT job or whatever it is that they're doing, and they're using wholesaling to get into real estate so they can get into real estate full time and get away from this other thing or whatever. And that's all they're thinking about, is quitting their job. But yeah, what's the real answer to quitting your job is not needing the job at all, by having some asset income to help you along the way.
Yeah.
You can quit your job a lot earlier if you had $2,500 a month coming in from asset income. And that's the difference between waiting the 20 years on a loan to pay off and going straight to private money right out the bat and just taking a piece. I love taking a piece.
So Ken, somebody listening now, what are the steps? You know, I know in your PowerPoint, I appreciate you sharing with me, you have a slide in there, steps to financial freedom. And so somebody listening right now, what are the skills that they need to acquire? What is we've already talked about networking. We've touched on private money a little bit. We've talked about understanding how to, you know, creative deal structuring. Are those the main skill sets that people out there need to acquire, the knowledge needed to acquire in order to start building financial freedom in a debt-free manner, in your opinion?
Yeah, those are the main ones. In my opinion, if you're going to get out there and play and try to take pieces of deals and working with private money, you've got to understand the self-directed IRA stuff. Hmm. Most of my private money is coming from somebody's self-directed IRA. And if you don't understand it, then it's hard to convince anybody to do it. So you ought to have one, even if you've got, you know, $80 in there, you ought to have one. So you've done the paperwork. You ought to understand those rules. The best place to get all that, I plug him all the time, and he doesn't know me from Adam, is Pete Fortunato's class.
He's such a genius. I attended his class with Dykes Botterford last year. That guy gotten more about creative deal structuring than I know. I mean, it's that guy is just a wealth of
man. That you could go to that class 4 years in a row, and then you'd know 20% of what he knows. It's assets101.com. He does a self-directed IRA class usually about February every year, and that's where I learned it. And I honestly, Alex, I went to that thing, and most of that information was about 8 feet over my head, and I was just watching it go by. But I came home with like three things. I can do that. Like, I don't understand a lot of this other stuff, but I can do that. And I came home with about three things, and I've been doing them for 20 years. So I believe that is a skill set. I've got a lot of friends who now have self-directed IRAs. And I'm talking about friends that aren't in the game. They're not in the game like we're in the game. They're just people who's got the money. But they now have self-directed IRAs because I've educated them on that. And then when they get one, what's the first thing they do? They call me up. Hey, Kim, what you got? Hmm. What you got? What can we get involved in? So I think that's another skill set. But creative deal making, and again, if we go back, because I know your podcast, Alex, goes to a lot of wholesalers, as it should, because you run a wonderful example of the way a wholesaling business is supposed to be. But those beginner or intermediate people in wholesaling, when you get a good deal, stop for a second and think, what else could I do? Yeah, I got a great deal here. I know if I send it to my list, I could have $10,000 tomorrow. If I work it hard, I might and really put it out to the right people. Or like if I don't put it out to my whole list, but if I call John and Harry, they pay the most, maybe I'll just send it to them first. Maybe I'll get $15,000 wholesale. Because it's a really good deal. But if it's any kind of cash flow deal, just hold on a second. How can I get in? I think the rush to get the check and then put it out on Facebook, here's my $12,000 assignment fee check. The rush to that, the rush to the glory of that is maybe not in your best interest. If you need the money to get by, you need the money to get by. But if you're starting to get some momentum and you're starting to make some money, especially if you're starting to pay some taxes, you know, if you've got another $12,000 assignment fee, and if it looks like you're on track for that year, like you're having a pretty good year. Like, there's no doubt that your bills are going to be paid and all that. Do we really need another $12,000 and give four of it to Uncle Sam?
No.
Or do we need to just go straight to $300 a month for the rest of our life? I mean, which one achieves the goal? If the goal is financial freedom, again, every time you make a dollar, you got to pay some of that to Uncle Sam. But if you go straight to cash flow, then that $4,000 you're going to lose to Uncle Sam, it's not in the picture anymore. It's earning you money. Now, when it earns money, you have to pay tax on that. But you're not making 12, netting 8 or 9 after tax, and then investing it. You go straight to investing the 12 because you never cashed it out.
Many people,
I think people don't see that change.
Man, so I was just going to echo what you just touched on at the end there. I think number one, there's two points I want to make here. Number one, most people don't even stop and think that the biggest expense they probably have or will have in their lifetime are taxes, because Uncle Sam is a third partner. For some people, close to half a partner, right? For some people. So that's the first thing. Number two, you kind of just lobbed it out there. And I don't know, I want to highlight it, because that nugget right there, aside from everything else you've mentioned that has been extremely valuable and content rich, that one thing that I wrote down, you said, for wholesalers out there listening to me right now, when you get a good deal, stop and just think how you can get in. I wrote that down because I have been guilty of that so many times. Of, you know, you get excited because you know you got a good one on the hook, and you become a motivated seller, and you're anxious to get it out to your buyer's list, and you're anxious to close on it. But ask yourself what Ken just highlighted. Do you need that income? If you do, so be it. But if you don't, how can you get into that deal so you can start building or adding to whatever cash flow you already have? And just that one little tip right there about stopping and thinking, understanding, yeah. You know, that right there, I think is super, super valuable.
And there's the hybrid of that too. I've got a student and it was able to basically take a fee, like say maybe there was a $20,000 wholesale fee on the table, but it was a cash flow deal. He was able to wholesale it to his investor and keep a piece. So instead of taking the 20, he took 5 now, keep on feeding the family a little bit, yep, and took a piece. And then his team is going to manage the deal. And I'm telling you, people with money, most as soon as they figure out that you're a safe deal and they're going to make a safe return with you, they don't give a damn how you structure that. Excuse my friends. They don't care how you structure it. Once you're a proven entity, then it's like, where do I send the money? Where do I, you know? I mean, I can call up people right now and I say, hey, man, I need 80 grand. And then they'll say, you want me to wire it to that same attorney as last time? And I'll go, yeah, that's what I want you to do. I got to run out to another appointment. Can I send you the paperwork tomorrow? Yeah, no worries, man. And that's the end of that phone call. Once you get people to believe in you, they don't care what you make.
Yeah.
People think, oh, they'll think I'm greedy. If I say, no, you can take a partial wholesale fee and a piece if the numbers are there. If you'll just stop long enough and get out your financial calculator, get out my high-tech yellow legal pad here and play with it. Mm-hmm. Play with it. There might be an opportunity. And start looking for those opportunities to... talk about setting goals. I mean, you set it. If you need $100,000 a year to live, and you've got a wholesaling business that's going to make you 150, let's say, do you really want to make that other 50 and pay taxes on it, or do you just want to make the 100 you need and keep that other 50 invested in cash flow? Now, it's never going to be that simple, but I don't think many people think that way until they get, you know, in their 50s and look back and go, God Almighty, I could have done some things different. You know, I just didn't think.
Yeah.
You know, just didn't think. Thinking is not overrated. Stopping to think every now and then is a good deal.
The most powerful thing we possess are our brains, and most people only maybe use 5-10% of it. I mean, it's just... our brain is so powerful. So a couple of things, you don't even know this, Ken, but I recently recorded a couple about a podcast. One was called Think Tank Time, where I'm encouraging, I've recently been doing it, taking 15 to 30 minutes in the morning with no electronics, a piece of paper and a pen, and I'm just thinking. And some of it, sometimes it's goal setting, sometimes it's vision building, sometimes it's how do I acquire more assets or build more cash flow? Just think. And then recently, the expert before you was a gentleman by the name of Edwin Kelly from Specialized IRA Services, and that whole episode was about self-directed accounts and how to generate wealth and cash flow in a tax-free environment. So this is extremely timely, you know, this podcast being released right after his, because now we're talking practical steps and how you can structure deals creatively. Here's what I'd like to do to kind of wind down the show. I'm looking at your PowerPoint. Would you mind the next to last slide on steps to financial freedom? Do you mind if I just kind of quickly read that for people? Because I think that would be a really good way to to recap this episode. And then, by the way, man, there was you have. I would love to maybe, if you have some time at some point in the near future, do a part two where we can kind of get into some case studies, because this PowerPoint I'm looking at is awesome. And I think if we were able to do just a show dedicated on case studies, so people actually see how you structure some of these deals, I think that would be extremely valuable.
Okay. Yeah, if you think we can do it without people being able to see the numbers, that's always what worries me. I'm happy to do it. I love to talk about this stuff, man.
So thank you so much. We can record a video and you could share the PowerPoint, and we'll just put the video in the show notes. But so guys, Ken has a PowerPoint here. He did a presentation recently to the Life Hunter community, and it's Steps to Financial Freedom. So you're probably going to have to rewind this podcast, hit the 15 or the 30 seconds back a couple times. Just write this stuff down. Number one, set a reasonable lifestyle goal. Okay. Set a reasonable lifestyle goal, which we've already talked about. Number two, learn how to use self-directed IRAs, right? Self-directed accounts like Roth IRAs, et cetera. Solo 401ks, and those are just a few examples. Number three, learn how to create high return deals, right? So find investors who like lower rates of return than you. Find the people that are happy with 6, 8, 10%. You can find deals that give you 15 or higher, okay? So number four, and the last one, reach a lifestyle goal, then raise the lifestyle with each new deal. Make equity, cash it out, invest in high yield returns. So quickly, let me recap it again. Set a reasonable lifestyle goal. Learn how to use self-directed IRAs. Learn how to create high return deals by finding people that are happy with lower rates of return. And then lastly, reach your lifestyle goal, then raise your lifestyle with each new deal. Make equity, cash it out, and invest in high yield returns. I think that's a perfect way to put a bow on this particular podcast. And then I'll connect with Ken offline and we'll see if we can get something scheduled where we just go into case studies, because this is what Ken does on a daily basis. And he recently did a presentation that I did not get a chance to see. And I had so many people tell me, you got to watch his presentation. So Ken, brother, I genuinely appreciate you hopping on here, man, and just sharing so much content. Where do people connect with you? Reach out. I know you're in the South Carolina area, right?
Yeah, I live in Chapin, South Carolina, which is just west of Columbia, the state capital.
Right. Okay, perfect. So if people want to connect with you, maybe even partner on some deals or just find out what you have going on, work with you, whatever you might have going on, where's the best place to connect?
They can hit me on Facebook if they want to. Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S. They can hit me on Facebook. I don't really want to give out email or my cell phone without some kind of connection first on a podcast. But if they want to hit me a message on Facebook, I won't react quickly because I don't go there every day, but I will eventually see it and get back to you.
I hear you. Beautiful. So yeah, we'll include a link to Ken's Facebook page in the show notes, guys. So Ken, thank you.
Ken Holmes would be the one with the kayak going off the waterfall. That's my photo. That's how you know it's me.
Nice.
Have you see that in my ugly face?
Awesome, man. Well, don't go changing the picture now, right? So, hey, this is one thing I want to end the show with is, so you said you're 55 years old. Rewind the clock 20 to 30 years. Okay, so let's just, the 25 or 30-year-old Ken Holmes, knowing what you know now, okay, what's the one piece of advice you would share with the younger Ken Holmes that people listening can really draw from? I realize that's a loaded question.
There's a couple of things, but if I had to say the main thing, I would say debt free. Stay debt free. Make more money than you need, and put the rest in investments. And when you're young and you don't have a lot of money, it might have to be the stock market for a while. But debt. I mean, we didn't tell my long story, but I lost a couple million bucks. I would not have done that had I not had debt. I could have easily fixed that in advance, and that's a longer story than we have here. But it's hard to go broke if you don't have any debt.
Yeah.
So if I was starting over in my 20s, I would stay debt free, and I would network with every creative person I could run across. I would drive hours to go to meetings to hook up with creative people, and those two things are hard to do wrong.
That's a perfect way to end the show, man. It's hard to go broke when you don't have debt. So think about that, guys. I know there's a different school of thought out there with regards to leveraging debt. And I know there's people listening saying, oh, but what about all these pros to leveraging debt? When you have debt, do what's right for you. There's not a right or wrong per se. It's you got to figure out what works for you. But when you have debt, you introduce risk. Okay. However you slice it. When you don't have debt, risk goes all the way down. Okay. So those are my, you know, last kind of parting thoughts on debt versus no debt. But Ken, brother, I appreciate you, man. Hopefully we can get you on here for part two on a case study, but thank you for sharing your experience, your knowledge. And guys, you know, Ken shared a lot here. Just take a couple things or even one thing, you know, one of the things, even if you're a wholesaler out there, which chances are, if you're listening to this show, there's a large population of people that wholesale a lot of deals. Whenever you contract a property or your acquisitions manager contracts a property, whoever it might be, stop and just think for a bit and see what's the best way to do this deal. What's the best exit strategy? Do you need the income? If you don't, figure out a way to structure a creative deal where you get cash flow. Okay. Because you control the deal. That's the most important part. Then from there, you just got to figure out who to connect with, who to work with to structure a deal that makes sense, right? Find people that want lower rates of return and sky can be the limit for you. So thank you, buddy. Appreciate you, Ken. I know we'll be in contact, my friend.
Man.
I look forward to connecting on the next episode. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.